Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny with my co-host, Mike. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Vinny. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We're going to show today. We have a very special guest, Michael Barron of the Just Mets MLB blog. Always a great guest. Talking about, you know, the Mets to date, and we are going to be looking forward. I know some people are looking forward with panic in their eyes, but not us. This is a panic city free zone tonight. We are not going to talk about 2007. Will not be mentioned. The word collapse has been banned. We're not going anywhere near there. We're going to face, you know, the cold, hard reality that Met fans do not want to face, Mike. And that's after what has transpired over the last couple of weeks. This Mets team, even though it's not mathematically in stone, is going to the postseason. And I know you agree, Mike. You've been saying this since our trade deadline podcast, essentially.
You know me. I am not afraid to throw it out there this year, right? I feel this team is going, and that's that. On our last podcast, you asked me for a prediction where we'd be right now. That was 2 weeks ago. I said we would be 8 up. I'm sorry, we're only 7.5.
That works for me, Mike.
At all.
I'll round up for you. I'll round up to 8 for you, just because that was a good prediction. And let's talk about for a minute how they got there. And really, the focus is really on 3 games. And it was the 3-game series against the Nationals. Now, when you look at where they are right now, 7.5 games up, 9.5 games up, 2 days ago, that doesn't bother me, but I do want to at least mention that. It's almost hard to remember that heading into that series against the Nationals, they were only 4 games up. They were 4 games up with a 3-game series against Washington, in Washington. And there was a little bit of, okay, we have to make sure they play good ball. You know, if they only, you know, just don't get swept. But if you don't get swept, if you just win one game, which is what I think most reasonable Met fans, and when I say reasonable Met fans, I know it's hard to believe that some of them are out there, but I do believe there are some. But reasonable fans were saying if you take 1 out of 3 in Washington, you leave that series 3 games up, you're in good shape. You really, at that point, are saying let's match them so that we're up 3 for the last series and then, you know, all you have to do is not get swept. Okay. That was kind of the reasonable Met fans approach. Would you agree, Mike?
I didn't know what was going to happen, right? I can't predict the future that well, but I was telling people, I actually felt right. If you take 1 out of 3, you'll be fine. You know, because we knew the schedule got really, I mean, we got the Braves after that. And yeah, I think that they're actually not really playing, right? Those are basically forfeits when you play the Braves.
Oh my God, the Braves are so bad. And we could talk for a minute after we talk about the National Series about how the Mets then went to Atlanta, which is, you know, Turner Field is really, you know, probably their biggest house of horrors of any stadium in the major leagues. And they swept them in a 4-game series. I mean, I understand the Braves are bad. They are colossally bad. But it still is surprising to see the Mets go in and sweep a 4-game series just because of all the painful losses that they've had in that stadium over the years. But let's go back to that series. So they had a 3-game series in Washington. And the first game, the Mets had a come-from-behind victory, okay? And you felt really good. You said to yourself, okay, you've got the one game that we really needed to have. And it would be good to just get one more. You'd feel great. So what happens the next day, Mike? The next day was the much ballyhooed Matt Harvey, his big start. After this start, he may not pitch again, but this is, you know, this is to save his legacy, you know, start. And he is, you know, really pitches one of his poorest games of the year. And before you know it, the Mets are down 7-1. Although the 7, there was that error that Cespedes made in center field that led, I think, 2 of the runs score. I think only 5, and I know that sounds silly, only 5 of the 7 were earned. But regardless, it was 7-1. And, you know, everybody is ready to write the story for next morning's paper about how Harvey laid an egg in his biggest start. You know, that was the start. That was the story. But what happens, Mike? They come back and win that game. And you know, they won one of the inning where they tied it up was on just a barrage of walks by Drew Storen, who's becoming one of our favorites now because of that performance and what he did the next night. But then the winning home run was by Kirk Nieuwenhuis. And they end up winning that game 8-7 that they were down 7-1. Mike, I know that you're going to be with me on that. When that game ended, I told everybody who would listen to me that it was over. That was the Terry Pendleton game for the Nationals. That was it. It didn't matter. It was over.
It's over. They can play, you know, we got to play out the season now, but that was, they had to win that game and they didn't. And then there was I'll go more with Drew Storen did his Calvin Schiraldi impression.
Excellent. Excellent analogy.
And then Matt Williams, just like in 86, somehow brought him back the next day. And I don't think there should have been a person in the world that didn't know what was going to happen when he came in the next day. My head almost exploded with joy when he brought him in.
I couldn't believe it.
He immediately folded again, just like Schiraldi did. And that was it. You know, like they can, you know, they've got an easy schedule now. They'll win some games the rest of the way. But this, you know, it's math now. I'm not worried about anything. Right. We're just playing this out now.
Yeah. So as you said, so they turn around the next game, the third game. And, you know, Steven Strasburg pitches a great game. Mm-hmm. I think he struck out 13 guys in 7 innings or so. And he was leading, I guess it was 2-2. Was he leading 2-1 or 2-0? Kelly Johnson hit a home run off him. They end up taking him out of the game. They bring in Drew Storen somehow. And of course, Cespedes hits a 2-run homer off him and gives the Mets the lead, right? And they win that game. They sweep the series, which again, essentially ends it. The Mets then go on, they win the next 4 after that series. In Atlanta, as we said, they had an 8-game winning streak when they won the first game of the series against the Marlins on Monday. And so they had a 9.5 game lead on Monday night, Monday the 15th. That's Monday the 14th. I'm sorry, Monday the 14th. And, you know, it's basically everybody is saying what we're saying is that it's over. We're focusing on, can we get home field advantage? You know, they're on the heels of the Dodgers. Can we pull this out? And then, you know, the last 2 days, the Mets lost to the Marlins. And at the same time, the Nationals were beating the Phillies. So it's the first time in a long, long time that the Mets actually lost ground. And so now their lead is 7.5 games. With the Mets having 16 games to play, the Nationals have 17 games to play. And I know that there are people who can concoct scenarios that they start getting worried when you lose 2 games to the Marlins. But I'm with you, Mike, and I know you've been on this train for a long, long time. But you start doing math. You start looking at the games you have left. You know, the Mets have games against Philly, against Atlanta, against Cincinnati, games that are, you know, very, very winnable. And you say, you know, this team does not look like the kind of team that's going to fold in those games. So we can basically say we feel pretty good. The one thing that if you were inclined to have a little bit of fear is that the next 3 games for the Mets are against the Yankees, the Subway Series, which, you know, the Yankees are a good team. You know that they'll be pumped up for the games against the Mets. But I want to comment, if we have some Panic City folks out there listening tonight, I got a couple of three facts I want to throw out there about the Subway Series. Number one, the Mets pitchers in these 3 games are Steven Matz on Friday, Noah Syndergaard on Saturday, and Matt Harvey at least partially on Sunday. There's a little bit of a discrepancy on how long he's going to pitch. So the Mets have, you know, 3 of their top pitchers pitching. It's at Citi Field, which means that the Yankees hitters who are used to being able to basically blow on a ball and have it get out to right field, they're actually going to have to hit it here. And Alex Rodriguez, their leading home run hitter. Joe Girardi, I guess his binder has somehow, when he flipped to the page about this series, told him not to play him because he's a DH. So A-Rod will not be in the lineup. So while I know the Mets are always, Mets fans always are a little bit afraid of the Yankee series, always afraid of, you know, brothers, I'm not afraid this time, Mike. I think this is a series the Mets should win.
No, I'm not afraid of anything. Again, everything. Again, also as I said, everything's going right. The one thing I want to say about that week that started with the Washington series, it was another example of, you know, we've talked about this the last couple of podcasts. I mean, you know, let's relax and enjoy the fact that everything's rolling our way. I mean, you know, that everybody walking the ballpark in Atlanta so we could win a game. Then another game against Atlanta where, you know, it's two outs and nobody on, and somehow they give us that game. We're getting handed games where, you know, Storen handed us a game, let's face it. Everything's going our way, and so I'm not fighting it.
we're going to go to our very special guest, Michael Barron, in 1 second, but I before I put him on, you know, we spent a little bit of time talking about the 7-1 game that they came back and won against Washington, which really made you feel like it was over. But I know it was in the grand scheme of things. I mean, unless they win this division by one game, which is not going to happen. That last game in the Atlanta series where they were down 7-4, two outs in the ninth inning, and Daniel Murphy hit a 3-run homer to tie it. They win it in extra innings. That's another one of those games where if you are a doubting Thomas, that, and I said that on purpose because we all know Tommy is one of the biggest doubting Mets fans that we know, if that doesn't prove to you that this is quote-unquote our year and that this team is not going to let this happen down the stretch, I don't know what does. But let's go to our very special guest. We have he's been on before. He did a great job whenever he's with us. He runs the Just Mets MLB blog, does a terrific job, and if you are on Twitter, you have got to follow him, especially during games. There is nobody who responds to the insanity of Mets Twitter better than Michael Barron. Michael, you're on with Vinny and Mike, the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. How are you tonight, man?
I'm okay, but if I respond to the insanity, what does that make me?
No, but you respond to it in the best way. You have this combination of either diffusing it or responding in a way where you're ignoring it, but you're responding. It's an art form, and you've got it down. You really do.
Thanks.
Now, I know you've spent a lot of the last couple of days talking down the Panic City citizens from their ledge. And I said we're not going to be – and Mike and I are firmly – you know, we have moved away from Panic City. We are no longer having any mail delivered there. So you don't have to worry about us. But, we do the math. We watch the games. We see that this is – we just reference things like the 7-1 game, the game down in Atlanta, the last game, the Murphy 3-run homer game. There is nothing about this team that has us worried that they are going to go whatever, you know, 5-11 down the stretch. Why do you think that there is so much when this team is so exciting and has showed so much heart and spirit and all those corny phrases that we can use about a team that kind of gives you that feeling? Why do you think it is that the fans just don't want to accept it and they just would rather have this kind of woe is me, the sky is falling mentality?
Well, one thing you have to remember, a lot of the fan base that's on social media, that's on Twitter in particular, a lot of them are younger Met fans, really. I mean, there are some older people like us, but a lot of them are young. You know, a good example is Rich, you know, the guy I write with. And, you know, he's in his early 20s, so all he really remembers is what happened in 2007, 2008. He doesn't remember the fact that, and of course, it's easy to forget that the Mets clinched the division against the Marlins in 2006. But, you know, he doesn't remember the late storm that the Mets put up in 2001. He doesn't remember 1999, the uprising in 98. And, you know, he wasn't even born yet, you know, in the late 80s. So when it's all you know, it's easy to just follow that narrative. And so I get it to a degree. But you know, you talked about the math, and, you know, to be a scientist, I like to be scientific like the math. And the math just says it would take something extraordinarily awful on the Mets' part and something extraordinarily amazing on the Nationals' part to win the division. And even that might not be enough because, like I said, you know, the math just does not play to Washington's favor. I mean, if the Mets go 8-8, that means Washington has to run the table. And 8-8, you have to remember, the Mets, 10 of the next 16 games, the Mets are playing against the Braves, the Phillies, and the Reds. And if they absolutely fall on their face against those teams, they just don't deserve to be in the playoffs. So, and I just don't think it's going to happen. No matter what Washington does, I think the Mets are just ultimately going to take care of their own business and get the necessary wins to take the division.
And we completely agree. And when you look at the way teams like Atlanta and Philly are playing, I don't even know if falling on your face would allow you to lose those games. They are just so bad. So we're completely with you.
That's a good point. I mean, it might be harder to blow it at this point than it will be to win it. You know, I mean,
if I could just interject for 1 second,
the competition. And so, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, if I can go to Panic City for 1 second, I mean, you know, we've seen this before, so it's not like it can't happen. The Mets generally prove that what you think is impossible is in fact possible, and they actually do it. So, you know, I don't want to put the cart before the horse here by any means, but, you know, having said that, like, I don't even think a Metsian type of run could ruin this at this point. It just doesn't seem possible. And, you know, I think this is a different team. This is a championship pedigree, what they have here. And, you know, this isn't like the 2007 team that, you know, took all this for granted. You know, these guys are going on the radio and saying to Mike Francesa as they were falling apart, you know, well, we're bored with the competition. There's not a single person in that clubhouse that's bored. And, you know, I can personally vouch for that. I don't think Terry's taking it for granted. I mean, certainly David Wright, I mean, he says every night, this is not 2007 or 2008. This is a totally different team. And that's a guy who was here when all that happened. So, I mean, I think those guys know a little bit more than what we do. And, you know, look, they could fall apart. I guess it's mathematically possible. But like I said, it would be more likely that they back into the playoffs than completely collapsing altogether, just because there aren't enough games left for them to totally screw this up. There just isn't, you know?
And also, one other comparison with the 2007-2008, I mean, this is not Luis Ayala trying to close out games. This is a very different team. This is not a team that was really had injuries down the stretch and where, you know, this team is at its best. This is the best lineup and the best bench and the best bullpen, the best everything that they've had all season is what they have right now. So it's a different scenario.
In terms of the roster construction and the way the team is built, this is the best team they've had since the late 80s, just in terms of the overall depth, their ability to maneuver people in and out and not skip a beat. You know, those were the kinds of teams that Davey Johnson used to manage. And, you know, Bobby Valentine didn't have that versatility. You know, they basically rolled the dice with a couple of hitters and hope they got enough pitching. You know, the same thing with Willie Randolph. I mean, Willie Randolph had a juggernaut, but, you know, the pitching just wasn't there. You know, the Mets have the pitching, although it's struggling. But the Mets have the pitching. They have the pitching up and down, and they also have a lineup that scores 6.5 runs a game. And if you're doing that and you with this pitching, they're going to be hard to beat, you know. Especially, I mean, the Phillies and the Braves are just no contest for that. I mean, they've shown that.
Right. Well, let me ask you then one question, Mike. Is there anything at all, and I'm not talking about this, you know, collapse. I'm just talking about when you look at the team and we look at them heading to the postseason, if we make that assumption, which is the right assumption, is there anything that worries you about this team? Are there any issues that you think could be exposed when they get to the postseason?
Well, you know, it's a good question. A month ago, I actually wrote about what seems to be coming to fruition. And when you look at the starting pitching, they've begun to struggle pretty much as I kind of expected them to start to struggle a little bit. They struggled a lot at home and given up a lot of home runs at home, too, over the last month, which is probably the most surprising part of all. But so I think in general, you know, we're talking about stamina and health issues with Matt Harvey. We're talking about, you know, stamina issues with Noah Syndergaard. You know, the fact that the team's even hinting at the possibility of skipping over Jacob deGrom means that they're probably dealing with some of those issues with him, too. So I think you're starting to see a lot of those kinds of problems with young pitchers crop up at a bad time. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, when push comes to shove and, and the spotlight, the light turns on again, that the pitching won't get itself into gear. You know, I have every bit of faith that it will. But, you know, it's the one consequence of having so much young pitching and so much young pitching that's really in uncharted territory. You know, you have to remember, Syndergaard's thrown more innings than he ever had. So is DeGrom. You know, Harvey's coming off the injury, and he's coming close to his career high. None of them have pitched complete major league seasons. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of concern because you really don't know what to expect from them. But, you know, talent usually trumps all, and I think we know how good their four best starters are. I mean, they're better than, you know, Jacob deGrom and Matt Harvey, you know, in any other season would probably be in the Cy Young discussion. So, you know, the fact that they have two of those guys means that they have a pretty special rotation. I think it's just a matter of the Mets managing their stamina, managing the workload down the stretch. And that's probably why it would have been nice for them to win this series, because it's one less win than they need, next week, the week after. And, it, you know, it just could be an extra day that maybe they can rest someone like Jacob deGrom. I mean, they really want to rest them. But, you know, as Terry said on, was it Tuesday? He said, as long as you're in it, he's pitching. So, maybe that once, if they can clinch early enough, you know, hopefully they do, of course, but if they can clinch early enough, they'll shut him down, you know, maybe give him a couple innings that final weekend just keep him sharp.
Let me ask you a question then about kind of, you were talking about the starting rotation, but let's talk about the starting rotation, but also segueing it into the bullpen. You know, when they get to the postseason, you're going to go with four starters. And you assume, let's assume that we know two of them. I think we know more, but let's assume we know Harvey and DeGrom. Who are your other two? Does it matter if it's home or road because of this whole, do you not start Syndergaard on the road? Does Bartolo Colon get a postseason start because of this, you know, stretch he had before last night, which wasn't that great of a start? What happened? Does Nice go to the bullpen because there's a lefty problem? How would you address a playoff rotation right now?
Well, they are cognizant of the home road issue with Syndergaard, but I think that's a little overblown. You know, a lot of his, I know his numbers haven't been that good on the road, but, you know, he did pitch really well at Dodger Stadium, and I know that's a very small sample, but he pitched well at Dodger Stadium, but he also pitched well in St. Louis, if you remember, a week and a half later. So, and he pitched really well in Atlanta, you know, 5 days ago. So I think it's just a matter of Syndergaard just finding that consistency. I mean, you have to remember, he's a rookie, and, you know, he's still learning. He's going to go through those ebbs and flows. And I think when he was struggling last month, I mean, you can kind of see it on his face. Like, he just didn't seem as focused on the mound, just in terms of his approach, as he was, say, a month before when he was really on a roll, pitching well both at home and on the road. He just wasn't winning on the road, you know. So I think that home-road thing is a little bit overblown. Having said that, they are cognizant of it. And if they do get home field advantage, I think he could get a game one or game two start. If they don't, he'll pitch game three or game four. But I do think if Syndergaard was going to be in the bullpen, and this isn't the first time this has come up. I mean, there was some talk about it in spring training, if you remember. But I think he was going to be in the bullpen in October. They would have started that process a little bit already. And there's just no sign of him coming out of the rotation, at least not as long as the Nationals are mathematically in the race. And maybe that changes if they clinch. But right now there's just no signs of him going to the bullpen. So I still think it's very much up in the air, short of the two guys you mentioned. I think Bartolo Colon has certainly pitched himself into the conversation. And potentially John Neese has pitched himself out of the conversation. He hasn't pitched that well. So I think we really need to wait until the final week when, you know, everybody's making their last starts and, you know, we see what the full body work looks like. But I ultimately think that my personal opinion is, I mean, if I had to put money on it, I would say the two you mentioned, Syndergaard and Mats, will be in the rotation ultimately. That's what I believe.
And I tend to agree with you, although I think that the idea, and I know it's been floated a little bit, you've written a lot about the lefty reliever problem, and some people float out there, you know, Neese as a potential guy to solve that problem. My personal opinion is I don't see it. And I know Sean Gilmartin has really struggled against lefties. My gut is that they end up, you know, abandoning the traditional idea of a lefty reliever because we just don't have one. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. And I look at someone like Tyler Clifford, and, you know, I know he's given up a lot of home runs lately, but he's absolutely owned left-handed hitting this year. And he's actually dominant against left-handed pitching. I know he's the eighth inning guy, but, you know, they're really going to have to depend on that crossover type of pitcher, really, to get left-handed hitters out. Because, as you said, especially now that, you know, Alvarez injured his groin, and he's probably, I would expect he's out for at least a month. You know, without anyone like Dario Alvarez, and they can't go out and get somebody now. Eric O'Flaherty has been just ineffective, and that's putting it nicely. And they don't have, you know, Sean Gilmartin's a long guy, really. I mean, he's fantastic when he pitches more than one inning and he's not in a high leverage situation. So he's really not a candidate for that either. And, you know, we saw yesterday he gave up three consecutive hits to left-handed hitters in a tight spot. So it's just not going to work there either. And, you know, they're really going to have to just roll the dice and hope they're not faced with, you know, an Adrian Gonzalez in the eighth inning if they're down or up a run. That's really all they're going to have to do.
No, and look, you mentioned Adrian Gonzalez because, I mean, it's pretty apparent that it just depends on which team will have home field advantage, but that it will be the Mets versus the Dodgers. And so, of course, you're facing – everyone talks so much about – and rightfully so – about the Mets starting rotation, about how good they are. But, you know, on the other side of the field, you'll have Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke. Zach Greinke is having one of these all-time ridiculous seasons. Already the word that's coming out, and if you believe anything that you read, is that, you know, Don Mattingly's leaning towards having Clayton Kershaw start a playoff series rather than Zach Greinke. As crazy as it sounds, do you think that that's actually an advantage for the Mets to have Kershaw pitch game one versus Greinke?
I don't think there's any realm where you can call facing those two guys, you know, presents any sort of advantage. I mean, they're really amazing. Now, having said that, Matt Harvey and Jacob DeGrom are pretty good too. So, you know, it'd be an epic battle in those first two games. A total crapshoot, you know, for each team. You know, it's just about, you know, keeping it close and getting into the bullpen. And I think the Mets actually have the advantage in the bullpen. I think the bullpen is shut down after the seventh inning for the Mets, whereas the Dodgers, they even have a closer, like a reliable closer. Kenley Jansen, I know, has been their closer, but he hasn't performed like Jury's Familia has, and they don't have that Tyler Clifford type of presence. So, you know, I think, you know, for both teams, it's just a matter of keeping it close and not, you know, not allowing that many runs because, you know, someone's not going to give up runs in those games. And I will say this as well. You know, if you recall, the Mets have won two games in which Kershaw and Greinke have pitched this year. So I think they've shown they can win those games. They can find a way to win, you know, whether it's late or not. So I, from an opponent perspective, the Dodgers are not nearly as intimidating to me as someone like the Pirates or the Cubs, the Cardinals. I mean, of course, you got to take care of business to get that ball. But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily – I think the Mets should have confidence against the Dodgers no matter what. They played well this year.
And I would agree, and it is kind of amazing that, you know, the Mets won the season series against the Dodgers, who, you know, with their ridiculous payroll and the star pitchers we just mentioned, but they didn't win any games against Pittsburgh and Chicago. It's pretty astounding.
As you said, you know, you have to remember the Mets were a completely different team when they played the Cubs. So
yep,
it'd be interesting
agreed.
To see that matchup now, you know.
No, you're right. That's absolutely right. And look, the postseason is very different than the regular season. And if the fans if they're going to go back to – if the Panic City folks are going to go back to 2007, 2008 to talk about collapse, then us folks are going to have to go back and tell them that, you know, 1988, the Mets were 12-1 regular season versus
yeah.
the Dodgers and lost that series. So let's not
yeah.
think that losing the series to those teams means it should be the postseason. Another question for you, Mike. Go ahead. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, everything that happens in the regular season goes out the window. You know, the matchup stuff really between, you know, say it gets to the Mets and Cubs, that's just media fodder. No one in the clubhouse is thinking about that. You know, they're just thinking about winning. That's all they care about in the postseason.
Right. And a guy like Yoenis Cespedes had nothing to do with any of the losses against those two teams. So
can you imagine Cespedes hitting a big home run at Wrigley in Game 5 in the NLCS? I sure can.
How great would that be? One more question I wanted to ask you, Michael, before we let you go. Terry Collins, I know, you know, especially the pre-trade deadline, and it just shows you what the team means to the perception of the manager. There were a lot of people who were very down Terry, questioning his bullpen moves, questioning his lineup construction, questioning everything. Nowadays, you know, Terry can do nothing wrong. You can point to when in the game that Mike and I talked about before you joined us, the third game of the National Series, when he pinch hit Kelly Johnson for Wilmer Flores, and a lot of Met fans are saying, why would you do this? He turns around and hits a home run. He can do no wrong. There's been now some chatter, besides, you know, from the beginning of the year saying Terry doesn't know what he's doing. Now those same people are saying perhaps Terry is the manager of the year in the National League. Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on Terry in general? And then secondarily, do you think he's manager of the year?
I do. I mean, you know, there was legitimate noise on their last West Coast trip that if they hadn't been successful, you know, that might be the end, you know. But fortunately, that was, if you think about it, that was really the turning point for him and the club, you know, which they you go out there and they always seem to struggle. They find a way to lose games out there. And, you know, they played extremely well, and it really turned their season around, you know, in that it bought the Mets time, got them to the trade deadline, and gave Sandy Alderson a reason to retrofit the club. So, you know, I think I'm always looking back towards that West Coast trip. But to your question, I think right now, you know, it's, you know, he has a very deep roster and a very deep lineup on any given day, you know, whether it's righty or lefty. He wants to – thought he rested too many guys yesterday, but whatever. You know, but, you know, even if he wants to rest some of his A guys, his B guys are better than his A guys were just 6 weeks ago. You know, you look at July 23rd, which was the last time they got shut out before yesterday, and John Mayberry and Eric Campbell were batting third and fourth in the lineup against Clayton Kershaw. You know, so, you know, there's a big difference in the way the roster is. So, you know, when you have talent, it's really hard to credit the manager. I mean, you know, I think he's done a great job molding all this together. But I think what should get him manager of the year was his ability to keep it together, to keep a fragmented roster, to manage all these injuries, to manage all of the expectations and go through those ups and downs and get them to that point to where they could turn this around, get healthy and get more people in here. And for that alone, to me, he deserves to the manager of the year. You know, you look at the Cubs and, you know, certainly I think the Cubs have done better than anyone expected. But, you know, the Cubs have been healthy all year. They've been pretty consistent all year. You know, Joe Maddon they've mostly been on cruise control since the beginning of the year. Terry Collins has had a much more difficult road to this point, and he had a lot less to work with for a lot more time. And to me, that's what gives him the edge. And, you know, when it's going to come down to both those guys. And I think Terry has the edge for what he had to do with what he had.
I would tend to agree with you, Michael. I think a lot of people give Joe Maddon a little more credit than he deserves, and I'm not saying he's not a terrific manager because he is. But when people say that, you know, they look back to last year's performance of the Cubs and they talk about year-over-year improvement, I think everyone in baseball generally had the Cubs circled as a team that was really on the rise and was going to have a breakout year based on the young talent they had, like Chris Bryant and the you know the signing of John Lester. I mean, it was kind of, you know, I wouldn't say they were a trendy pick because the Nationals were the true trendy pick. But there were a lot of people saying, you know what, the Cubs are going to be a really strong team. So, you know, in some ways, he managed two expectations in my mind. And I hope you don't think that's too biased by being a Met guy. But I personally wasn't shocked by the Cubs' performance when you saw what they had coming into the season.
Well, and I think that's really where the assessment needs to be. And, you know, it's like you said, I don't know that they were expected to be this good, but I think – like you said, they were expected to contend and, you know, at least take the next step, show some progress. I think the Mets, to a degree, were expected to, you know, be that, you know, low to mid-80s type of win team. But then it all went south because of the injuries, yet Terry managed to keep their heads above water. And, you know, without his ability to keep the clubhouse in check, filter out all the noise and all the negativity, and believe me, there are whispers about his job being in jeopardy before that West Coast trip. And, you know, they were coming off that terrible series against the Cubs. And, you know, they were, you know, 500 maybe. Did they fall a little bit below 500? I can't remember at the time. But, you know, there was definite noise about his job. But, you know, he filtered that out and righted the ship in California. And they haven't looked back for the most part since. And they had a tremendous month in July against what a lot of people felt was an impossible schedule. And they still went 13-12 against all those plus 500 clubs, including St. Louis, including Chicago. And they lost all seven of those games against the Cubs, all four of those games against the Cubs.
No, you're
so
right.
I think
you're
he deserves
right.
a lot of credit. You know, he deserves a lot of credit for that. And with that team that was on the field every single day, you know, the Kirk Newlandhouses and the Eric Campbells and the John Mayberries, those were the guys playing. And he still managed to find a way, and that's the mark of a good manager to me. You know, he didn't have much to work with, and he found a way to beat those teams. And here we are.
I think you're right. Before I have one last question, my on-the-spot question coming up, but before we get that, I'll throw it over to you, Mike. Mike, you have a question for Michael tonight before we let him go?
Yeah, I might steal yours. I have a feeling that's what might happen. I apologize if I do. Michael, usually this is around the time of night where Vinny asks if the team is going to win the division, and I'm not even going to ask you that question. So I'm going to go with, what city do you think they're going to clinch in?
I think they're going to do it in Cincinnati. I think next Saturday or next Sunday.
And it sounded like two people yelling Cincinnati to me.
It's the little one saying goodbye to
Robert. Is that Victoria Shea?
It is.
All right. With that name, you can yell anything you want.
That's a great name.
Yes. My mother's name is Victoria, and Shea's very special to me, too. So that's a very good name for the Victoria.
Michael, we want to thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. And we definitely do agree with you. And keep trying to keep those citizens of Panic City at bay. We really appreciate you fighting the good fight to keep everybody sane. It really is. I'm telling you, if you people are not following him, you have to. It does a great job, but it also you just have to laugh sometimes at the types of things that people throw at him. And I'm not, and we didn't even touch on the whole middle name thing. We'll deal with that another time.
Okay.
Thanks again, Mike.
All right, guys. Thank you. All right.
Good night.
All right.
Bye-bye. Mike, that's Michael Barron from the Just Mets MLB blog. Great spot as usual. And he makes a lot of great points. You were right. You did steal my last question. And I do agree with him. I know we all, you know, look, Met fans want to see them clinch at home, which would be the series before against the Braves. If there's a stumble, the series after Cincinnati would be in Philadelphia, which is close enough for us to go to. But I'm with Michael. I don't think either one of those scenarios is going to happen. I think it's one of those games in Cincinnati. And I think that, you know, I haven't really mapped it out on the calendar, but I'm thinking that should be enough time to give Jacob deGrom a skipped start. And it doesn't – remember, I know that Terry said as long as we're in a race, but if there's, you know, I don't know, pick a number, 7 games to go and the magic number is 1 and Jacob deGrom is supposed to pitch that night, he might get skipped because it's the right thing to do long term.
I'm going to surprise you a little because I've been very aggressive. You know, I said on August 6th that by the time we got together again, it was all over, they'd win by at least 5. Last podcast, I upped it to 8, you know, by tonight. I'm not concerned at all about, you know, the eventuality of it all. But I'm going to pick Philly, and I'm going to say when all is said and done, it's going to be about 6. I think, you know, there's sort of like, I'm not saying they're taking their foot totally off the pedal, but they have all these pitches they're clearly concerned about, you know, the innings limits and getting guys rest. And look, they have a big lead, you know, they're not trying to shut it down because they know they got to finish this off. But I can see, you know, they're also, you looked at that lineup last night, they rested a lot of guys, you know, I think you can see that there's going to be a little bit of managing the situation with an eye towards you can potentially have a long postseason if things go well. You know, it's a whole month if it goes well. So I think it won't be as quick as, you know, as a fan, you'd love to see it at home, and that would have taken a real run, like, you know, a real crazy run. That crazy run was going to have to continue a whole nother week. So I think we've got to be a little more patient to that.
I'm with you, and I think that's really what is going to happen. I do think, you know, the Mets, they have 3 games against the Yankees this weekend, and we could talk about that in a minute. Following those 3 games, after that series, they would have 3 home games against Atlanta and then the 4 games in Cincinnati. And we could, if we stop there for a minute, that's 10 games. And again, it's 3 Yankees, 3 Braves, 4 Reds. You know, I can't see a scenario, Mike, where they do worse than 6-4 in those games, okay, based on what we said about the teams that they're playing. So if they go 6-4, I guess it's conceivable they could go 5-5, but I doubt that. The Nationals are not going to win the next 10 games. They're not, okay? So at the end of, you know, we're talking about if the Nationals, if the Mets win 6 games, and in those 10 games, the Nationals go 7-3, which is doing pretty well. The Mets would have a magic number of 1.
Absolutely. And like we said, and some of this is a matter of, I mean, the Nationals sort of rebounded a little bit. I mean, they almost blew that first game against Philly, remember? But they didn't. And then they rebounded to win the next 2 games. So are they going to come off the mat and put like a semi-run together and at least make the Mets work for this? That's going to have something to do with this as well. I mean, if the Nationals really kind of fold up now, then it's going to be Cincinnati. You know, it's going to be Cincinnati because
right.
You know, we're not going to have to do much.
So that would be good. So, and by the way, the Marlins are playing the Nationals tonight, and it's 2-2 in the 3rd inning. The Marlins did have a 2-0 lead in the 1st inning, and Ian Desmond hit a 2-run homer to tie that game. But it's 2-2, and as the Mets have seen, or the Nationals, the Met fans have seen the Marlins over the last few nights, they are at least playing hard. So hopefully they'll be able to pull a game or two out from them. Before we get, we're expecting to hear from Marty from Brooklyn in a few minutes. I know some people might have thought that yell in the background that was really Victoria's say sounded a lot like Artie's voice. But no, Artie will be joining us hopefully in a few minutes. But before that, let's talk. Look, the Subway Series is usually a pretty big highlight of a season for the Mets, especially the games that are at Citi Field. And it's really funny, Mike. These 3 games, you know, the Mets are in first place. The Yankees are only 3 games out of first, and they are, you know, pretty firmly entrenched as one of the wild card teams in the American League. So you're talking about 2 postseason teams – you know, down the stretch, late September games. But it's really funny. I would not go so far as to say the Subway Series is not getting the attention. But because of everything that's gone on with the Mets in the race, it really hasn't been talked about much. Do you think I'm missing something? It's almost like just being looked at. I wouldn't say three games on the calendar. I'm not being that flip. But it wasn't looked at with any extra juice. Do you think I'm misreading it?
Well, I think what you're seeing here is the reality of, to some extent, interleague play is a gimmick. I mean, to some extent, it just is. And the Mets are in it. And we're Mets-centric, is the way we look at things. And so when we looked at the big games over the last month, it was these games with the Nationals. It was the series that's taking place and potentially the series that was going to end the season. And that is where our focus has been, right? I mean, that's, you know, rightfully so, by the way. I mean, you know, nothing can happen this weekend that would have been – nothing could happen this weekend that would have been as devastating as losing three in a row to the Nationals last week. And so I think that's a lot of it. I mean, I think that they put it in September, and it so happened that the Mets – and the Yankees, by the way. I mean, the Yankees have Toronto afterwards. If you're a Yankee fan, not that you don't want to win these games, they're in a situation where they need to win, you know, plain and simple – but the games they're really focused on is the Blue Jays. And, in fact, you know, Girardi made a pitching change that does affect the Mets. The Mets are going to get Tanaka. But that was not designed for the Mets. That was pitching Tanaka against the Mets so that now he lines up against the Blue Jays.
Right. No, you're right.
So
I think
that's part of it.
I do think it's part of it is that, you know, the Mets are more focused on the Nationals and the Yankees and their fans are more focused on Toronto. And so it does make these games seem gimmicky. And it's really funny as a Met fan, it's funny to hear Yankee fans say how the schedule isn't fair because the Yankees have to play the Mets during in this stretch and the and Toronto plays somebody weaker. I mean, you just got to love to hear that.
You know, it's true, though.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. So, and on
and
that
we've lived
note,
through the reverse, and we lived through the reverse many times.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. Now, on the topic of fans who are complaining about things, we are being joined, and I don't know what you could possibly complain about right now, but we are being joined by the one and only Artie from Brooklyn. Artie, you're on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. How are you tonight?
You know, is it bad that I'm feeling agita that we're 8.5 up or 7.5 up and we lost 2 out of 3 to the Marlins? I hate the Marlins. I hate the Marlins more than I hate the Yankees, if that's possible. How is that possible? Now,
well,
you know,
the
when
good
they
news
this,
is, you know, the Marlins, you know, the Marlins yeah. are playing the Nationals the next 4 games starting tonight, so.
Yeah, that's the only way I'll love them. All right. So
tonight you got to start rooting for the Marlins.
Yeah, when they made this schedule, I guess they're thinking that the Mets could be spoilers and this would be our playoffs, I guess, in the beginning of the year, right? I guess that's what they were thinking, to make it this late
right.
in the season.
Right? I think you're right.
Yeah, and still, I mean, I know the Yankee fans would rather not play us, but in that turn, I still would not rather play the Yankees right now. I mean – it's just that I just want this to be over with. I mean, it was over when they won the 3, and now I'm starting to go back to 2000, whatever the hell that year that was. Where
deep breath.
You know, 17-7. Just please to God, don't go back to 7 games out with 17 to play. That's not going to happen, right? Good.
No, it can't
oh,
happen.
We
can't get there.
More,
yeah,
I
can't,
wish
that
we had
can't happen.
More games against the Braves. That's what I wish.
Right.
So, Artie,
you know,
you had a question.
I call basically for Cespedes because, you know, thinking before this whole Cespedes thing was happening, I said the Mets are going to lose Cologne and Murphy. And if they do not take that money and get somebody big, okay, that's it for me. I'm done. Cespedes, and it just reminded to even Phantom that this team when I left that game with you guys, today was it the Dodger game or the Cubs, whatever game that was.
The Cubs, yeah, the Cubs game.
Yeah, the Cubs, yeah. The Cubs.
Where we were begging for DeGrom to hit, and then take him out of the game, because that was our best hitter, and to have Mayberry and whoever as the fourth and fifth hitter, and then to come to this and to win this division with this team, and see what Cespedes did to this team, and Mike, you were totally right. When the Cespedes trade was made. I mean, I'm sorry for taking up so much time, but when Cespedes trade was made, I argued with Mike that the team still wasn't better than the Nationals. And he told me that I think you were a little too young to remember in 69 what the trade it did to the Mets. And you said to me, it wasn't the trade, you know, getting the hitter. It's what he did to the rest of the lineup. And sure enough, Cespedes has been great. But what's made the Mets so great is what he's done to this lineup. All of a sudden, I mean, everybody started hitting. Everybody was so much better. And to lose Murphy and Colon and not be able to sign Cespedes, it's just a shame. It really is a shame. And then the NVIDIA discussed, okay, if it's not Cespedes and it's somebody else, fine. If it's not Cespedes, but they got to replace the money. That was the thing. When they lost Reyes and they didn't replace the money, it wasn't losing Reyes. It was not putting the money back. That's what killed it. You can't go in here and have a $90 million payroll because you won the division this year. You just can't do that to the fans. All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Artie. Look, Artie's right. Look, I think that let's enjoy this run, okay? Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to look ahead. I'm not trying to talk about the future, all that stuff. But let's, for a minute, talk about the future. The Mets, no matter what happens, assuming they make the postseason, even if they lost the first round to the Dodgers, this would be viewed as a very positive year. Met fans would be feeling very good about their team. I'm sure season ticket renewals are up. Season ticket deposits are already up. There's a lot of momentum heading into next year and positive feeling about the Mets. Now, if Cespedes leaves, the Colon money comes off the books. I won't even talk about Murphy because I guess there's a possibility he stays. But however, you would think that the Met ownership, just from a pure business perspective, talked a little bit too much in the past about, you know, the Mets from a business perspective. Thank God the last few months, you know, a couple, really 2 months, we've been able to talk a lot about baseball. They would think, you know what, that if the only way we could kill this positive feeling, both in terms of momentum, you know, fan sentiment and money coming in the door, is if we don't replace Cespedes if he leaves, if we don't spend some of the Colon money. I think they have to be very conscious of that. And as much as I love Cespedes and would love him to stay, I do recognize that, you know, he could command a price that frankly he's not worth. You got Sandy Alderson, who is a calculator, who's going to want to pay guys what they are worth. And there could be a number where it really doesn't make sense to keep him. I would accept that. If he signed, the example I gave was if he signed an Ellsbury 7-year or whatever it is, $180 million contract with another team, I don't know if I would be upset that the Mets didn't give him that contract. But everyone involved has to know that you have to have a plan B, a plan C, you know, who you're going to go out and get another big player to take his place. Maybe it's Justin Upton. Maybe it's a trade for Yasiel Puig. You know, get a little crazy. Maybe it's a trade for Robinson Cano, although I severely doubt that. But you know what I'm trying to say, Mike. You would have to think that all parties involved at this point know that to keep the train on the tracks here, they're going to have to either sign Cespedes or get an equivalent player. Do you think I'm giving them too much credit, Mike?
I don't know, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Let me put it this way. First and foremost, I'm focused on the present because the present's great. But that's just the topics on the table. What I will say about it is a lot of talent at the deadline, and that talent was needed.
because that talent was not brought in, was sure appear for financial reasons before the season began. We knew that there was a lot of holes and that a great pitching staff was not being surrounded by enough talent. I'm not even talking Cespedes. You know, if we had just had guys like Uribe and Johnson all year, this could have been a little bit of a different first half of the season. And that wouldn't have exactly broke the bank. Now, they're gone. You know, they're free agents. Murphy's a potential free agent. Cespedes is a potential free agent, et cetera. I don't know, and there'll be plenty of time in the offseason for us to talk about it, you know, the particular moves. But these guys, and you brought it up last podcast, said more than once, if the fans come back and the money comes in, it will be reinvested. That was laid out more than once. The fans are back. There's a lot of money coming in. SNY, I saw an article in the Times. It was a great article. I know you saw it as well, so you retweeted it. SNY ratings have doubled. There's got to be a financial benefit to that. You know, there's a fair expectation. I'm not saying break the bank, but we should not begin the year next year with the same hope and prayer offense around this pitching staff, which is in place and able to bring this team to wins year after year.
No, I agree. Look, I think that they've seen the difference both on the field and at the box office and on SNY and every other place you could put it between the team that they went into the season with and the team that they have today. And the difference is they did bring on a lot of guys. They went, you know, they didn't go with the Eric Campbell as your first guy off the bench mentality. They went out and got some real players. And so, look, I know that, you know, the fans who still clamor for a $130 million payroll, they're going to be disappointed. This is not going to be a $130 million payroll. However, I do see scenarios where I could – look, Mike, you might think I'm crazy because I know that this year they hovered around 100 or so. I would not be shocked if the payroll next year was between 110 and 115. And I know that that's, you know, still, you know, more of a – San Diego payroll than a New York payroll, but you know, we shouldn't be too excited about that. But I think you're going to get there. And if you're going to get there with the guys coming off the books that we talked about, it's because they are going to add some talent. They are going to do it. Now, maybe it's not going to be a $25 million player like Cespedes might be. Maybe it's not even a Ian Desmond, who maybe is another guy who's a good fit. But I'm confident that they're going to figure out ways to mix and match. And the example I'm going to give, and again, it's funny that we're New York and I'm going to use Kansas City as a comp. I know that's nuts. But the Kansas City Royals made the postseason last year. They lost Billy Butler. They lost James Shields. And what they do, they found ways to replace those guys. They got, you know, guys like Kendrew Morales and Edison Volquez. And look, Kansas City is one of the best teams in the American League right now. So I think the Mets are going to use that mentality of if we lose our guys, we're going to have to replace them. We're almost at the end of the show, Mike. We only have a minute left to go. We do have to go with our Met of the Week. And I know the last two games we have to discount them, but the Met of the Week, you know, it's got to be Yoenis Cespedes. Up until these last couple of games, was there a game that he did not hit a home run in? It was insane, Mike.
It was crazy. I mean, and 900-foot home runs, too. And you expected them. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, that one against Atlanta, I was like, ah, well, he's going to hit a home run now. I mean, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, some of these times he's getting up, and you're like, okay, here comes a home run. I mean,
it really is nuts, Mike. And you know, he's entitled to go into a little bit of a slump. But I have a feeling, you know, probably this weekend, the Yankee thing, I think he's going to have a big series. That about wraps it up. We've got to thank Michael Barron for joining us from the Just Mets MLB blog. He always does a great job. Got to thank Artie from Brooklyn for his call. We'll be back on September 28th, Monday. That's the next Mets off day. And by then, Mike, September 28th, where will we be?
We will be planning our postseason plans together because we will have clinched.
I hope you are correct. That about does it. We'll talk to you again. Thanks again for listening. And, of course, let's go Mets.